Public relations people try to leave nothing to chance. Like lawyers, they want to know the answers to any questions before they're asked. A number of years ago, Mike Deaver had the task of preparing his client, Governor Ronald Reagan, for a public forum in which index cards would be passed around for questions. Mr. Deaver surmised that many of the questions might be more or less the same. He arranged to plant several, and he brought the cards to Ronald Reagan for his perusal. But Ronald Reagan waved them off, saying,
"Mike, you can't do that." He said, "You don't understand. You can't hit a home run on a softball."
Well, obviously, Mike Deaver has joined us from their member station, KPBS, in San Diego. The underestimation of Ronald Reagan as an actor, politician, finally as president, is the theme of Mike Deaver's personal recollection of a friendship. His book is called A Different Drummer. Mike Deaver joins us, obviously. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Let me ask you about what we noted to seem to be a lifelong theme of underestimating his intelligence, for that matter, his competence as an actor. You were one of his handlers. You say he wasn't handled.
No, we didn't make him. He made us. The only thing I really ever did, Scott, for Ronald Reagan was to light him well. He really did the rest, and I filled up all that space around his head on the TV screen. But those were his ideas. Those were his priorities. Those were his words.
You describe a story in his early White House years when you brought a group of African American employees of the White House to see him because they were put out with something that he proposed to do. Could you tell us that story?
It was the Bob Jones case, Bob Jones University, and the lawyers around Reagan had convinced him that this was a constitutional issue, that the federal government shouldn't tell a university or a college what they could do just because they gave them money, and Reagan had gone along with that. I knew, however, from talking to the African-American,
Bob Jones was segregated.
Bob Jones was segregated, that's right. So I brought them in, and of course, when they got in the Oval Office sitting there with the president, they sort of clammed up. And I finally said, "Tell him what you're telling me." Mm-hmm. Tell him Thad Garrett, who worked for George Bush at the time, who had a church in Harlem, tell him what your parishioners call the president. And he very reluctantly said, "Sir, they call you the devil." And Reagan was horrified. He then went about looking at the whole thing and reversed himself. Mm-hmm. Said, "You know, this is not right."
What did that episode tell you about Ronald Reagan's style of leadership? I mean, on the one hand, it suggests he's personally reachable. On the other hand, should you need a personal encounter like that to know that segregation is a bad policy?
Perhaps he should have inquired on his own, but, you know, once again, the president has so much coming at him that there is a decision that's put before you, and you make that decision, and you go on to the next one. In this case, I knew that if he heard the other side of it, I knew where he'd go.
What about, let me ask you about a couple of other changes. He did sit down and write, by hand, I guess, a 6-page letter to Leonid Brezhnev.
He did when he was shot in the hospital after he was recuperating from the staph infection that developed. He came out of the hospital and handed this 3-page letter on legal paper that he'd written in the hospital to Brezhnev and handed it to Al Haig and the National Security Council people and said, "Check it out." And they brought it back the next week and had totally changed the letter. And he said, "Well, you know, maybe those people over in the State Department know better about this." And I said, "Wait a minute, they didn't get elected to anything. They've been trying to get this thing resolved for 40 years. You ought to send your own letter." And he said, "You know, Mike's right, I'm going to send my own letter. And I'm going to rely on my own instincts more from here on out."
What did that letter say?
The gist of it was a sort of a warm letter that Brezhnev would know would have been the first thing he would have done after recuperating, and which the tone was all a tone of peace.
Mm-hmm. Do you think after that assassination attempt, Ronald Reagan found his a feeling that he'd been spared for something?
No, I don't. I've always said that I think he ran for president because he believed it was his destiny to get the Soviets to the table, that he was the last guy that had lived through two wars and a depression, and was such a staunch anti-communist that he was going to have the best opportunity to get these guys to the table and negotiate.
Mm-hmm. You had to leave the White House at one point. You had some personal problems, which you mentioned in the book.
Right.
And then subsequently, after opening up a public relations shop, you were investigated by a special prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
Were relations with Mr. and Mrs. Reagan, maybe more to the point, a little difficult at that point?
I heard indirectly from them during that period of time, and I think their lawyers had told them that that was what they should be doing. It was a very difficult time for me.
Did you, in those moments, question, well, you know, just in the way Washington friendships can be, if you were a friendship that they could no longer afford?
I think I was disappointed and hurt. There's no question about that. Because, you know, when you go through something like that, it's helpful to have support.
Yeah. What's it like to have so much of your own life invested in somebody else's life and historic reputation?
I love Ronald Reagan. He is a profound part of my life. As a result of all the things I went through after I left service with Ronald Reagan, I've really become a different person.
How do you think you're different from the fellow who served in the White House and served in the governor's mansion?
I was always wanting to be something else, or having power to define me, or standing next to define me. That isn't Mike today. Mike Deaver is someone who is very happy in life and serene and pleased with who he is and what he does today. And you know, part of that comes from just taking time, which I never did in my life, to listen and to care about other people.
Ronald Reagan is not seen in public now.
Yes.
Do you have any contact, if we may ask, with what you would consider him, that actual person, or is that person just kind of gone from public life now?
Well, of course, I talk to Nancy and see her regularly. The last time I saw him, there was no recognition.
Mm-hmm.
He was reading or looking at a book in his office when I came in, and I sat down in the chair next to him. He never looked up, and I said, "What you reading?" And he slowly raised his head and looked at me and said, "A book." It was a book of horse pictures. So I sat there for a few more minutes, and he went back to studying this picture. And I got up and slowly left the room. And he seemed to be content, but he was someplace else. I don't know where.
That's sad, isn't it, to see someone whose very appearance could set off adulation around the world?
Right. It's very sad. Very sad. But you know, about a year ago, at 1 o'clock in the morning, the telephone rang, and it was Nancy, and I thought, oh my God, what's happened? And she said, "I know it's late, I know I've got you up, but I wanted to tell you that Ronnie just woke up out of a dead sleep and said, where's Mike Deaver?" So, you know, every once in a while, maybe those wires connect.
Yeah. Mr. Deaver, thanks very much.
Scott, it's great to hear you. Bye.
Michael Deaver, who's author of a new book, A Different Drummer, My 30 Years with Ronald Reagan.